Welcome back to Voices from the Front Lines on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and www.kpfk.org on the World Wide Web. This is Damon Azali and Eric Mann on Voices from the Front Lines. We are now joined on the phone by the other co-host from Venezuela, the World Social Forum, Tammy Banglu, and Manuel Criollos is trying to get to a phone right now. So, Tam, welcome to the show.
Hey, Damon, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
You should try Manuel on a cell phone.
Okay, we'll do that.
Hey, Tammy Lou, how you doing?
Hi, Eric. How are you guys doing?
Great. Tammy, let's start with the World Social Forum and what brings you to Venezuela. I mean, what is it? Is it worth going to? Quick on its history and a lot on the present. And you got about 2 or 3 minutes for the opener.
All right. So this is the sixth World Social Forum. And this World Social Forum is actually a polycentric forum. So they wanted to do 3 social forums, one in Latin America, one in Asia, and one in Africa. So right now, as the social forum in Caracas, Venezuela, the one we're attending, has now completed, along with the one in Mali. And the one in Pakistan that was supposed to happen simultaneously got delayed a month and will happen in March due to the earthquake late last year. So the World Social Forum is basically a convergence of left progressive social movements, and it's a place for debate. And so what's going on this month, I mean, this World Social Forum, is that it's in the heart of the Bolivarian Revolution. So it's in Caracas, Venezuela. And one of the big debates that's going on is, what's the future of the World Social Forum? What's the nature of this space? Is it going to be an open space, meaning that's just a lot for either self-organized activities or just an open space and a process that many, many things can happen, right? It's that vague. And it depends on the initiative of the group or the groups or the social movements to decide what they want to do with that space. The other big debate now is saying, look, let's turn it into a more movement space, a deliberate space that essentially we've been talking and debating for the last 6 years. Let's try to come up with either some consensus or try to strategize for the future together. That's really covering most of the conversations. And there's a lot of basis for both sides. So, for instance, in this social forum, we're in Caracas, Venezuela, and events are happening in 10 different areas throughout Caracas. They don't have the infrastructure. They don't have the infrastructure that that Porto Alegre, Brazil, has, for instance, that's had 4 social forums already in that country. And so they have infrastructure set up, major stadiums, arenas where you can actually house a lot of these workshops. So Caracas and they had to actually come up and be real creative and use the different venues throughout the city, which also gives folks a chance to look at the city, but it also could be you go into a workshop and it's all the way out in Parque de Este, which is about a 20-minute metro ride from the main source, which is the Teresa Cultural Center and the Hilton Hotel, and you go into a workshop and you get there and no one's there. So that happens very frequently, or you get there and there's a couple people that show up. So what's most consistent is a lot of these plenaries, which has been really some deep debates around the state of imperialism, particularly U.S. imperialism, and what are people's resistance looking like. And so they've had a lot of big headliners like Blanca Contosa and folks coming out of the Ecuadorian indigenous movement. You had Ricardo Alarcón, the National Assembly member from Cuba. You've had a lot of different social movements, from the trade union movement in Uruguay to progressive theorists and intellectual thinkers like Samir Amin. So that's
a
quick hit.
That's good. I mean, let's just take the debate really quickly. Well, I'll actually start with 2 points. One is that it's interesting that the original World Social Forum said that they're against any parties, any military or armed struggles. And what was the third one?
Governments.
And any governments. So now we have the World Social Forum. First of all, you have a more progressive government in Venezuela than you do actually in Brazil. Secondly, you have a government that came to power through the army. You have a party, the Bolivarian Party, and so forth. So how does the original founders of the World Social Movement come to terms with that? Maybe the best thing that's happened in our last decade has been the Hugo Chavez revolution. How do they theorize that?
Well, one to understand, Eric, is I think we know that the social forum process and the international committee is made up of a lot of different forces and has been, you know, quite a consensus, and there's been heated debates over this. So even the initial social forums, when you had the EZLN, basically the Zapatista show up, it was a major conflict both for the organizers and members participating, because here you have an armed force, a political party of sorts, and then how do you grapple with that, because it has tremendous standing in terms of the left movement at that time. Well, now we go over to Venezuela, and there's been a lot of debate and critique of saying, okay, is this World Social Forum, is Chavez throwing money at it, basically? What you're hearing a lot from both Caraqueños or Venezuelan organizers here is that they are respecting the autonomy of social movements. Now, that doesn't hurt, that doesn't stop the other side from continuing to have their critiques, so I think what's happening is that both is true. I mean, both is existing at the same time, and what is very present is that you have a lot of participation from the various Bolivarian circles or the various social movements that make up, you know, Chavistas, the supporters of the Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution here. And so each one of those forces have been very present throughout the city as well as the social forum. And you've got diverse folks from the MST in Brazil and different forces that are Chavez has reached out to, both in terms of meeting specifically with social movements. So having a, you know, an intimate talk with over 200 social movements, as well as then opening up space in terms of any of the major talks. And he's invited both the Grassroots Global Justice Delegation, of which the Labor Community Strategy Center, many grassroots groups like the Southwest Workers Union, Southwest Organizing Project, Miami Workers Center, CAB, et cetera, have been a part of, and gave tremendous precedence to Cindy Sheehan, the Poor People's Economic Rights Campaign, and Global Exchange, specifically as those folks that they're reaching out to inside the United States.
So you are basically, this is Eric Mann with Damon Azali in L.A., Voices from the Front Lines, 90.7 KPFK. We're on the phone with Tammy Banglu, who's right now in Caracas, Venezuela, at the World Social Forum that just finished its official plenary activities. So you are arguing that basically it is a good thing to have the participation of governments, armed struggles, and political parties, or are you?
I'm exactly saying that. I think that in the left, and particularly in the United States, and I say maybe throughout, there's a rigidity which has been talked about over and over again by many different forces, is that we can't be too rigid to say no to all state infrastructure. And so are the Venezuelan movements inside Caracas right now and Venezuela saying, look, we understand Hugo Chavez is the best thing that's happened to our movement. So we met with this community group called 23 de Enero. It's a huge group that's won a lot of prestige and a lot of focus because of their prominence in the no vote against the recall for Chavez. And they're saying, look, we've been in this struggle for over 30 years, fighting the various dictatorships. Now, after February 4th, which is when the coup attempted, they said, look, the theme is there's no turning back. We're totally supporting Chavez, and there's major important initiatives are coming about, but there's still a lot that needs to be changed. So on their side, as well as how I'm looking at it, it's a good thing to have both state, both governments, and also it's a tricky dance. I mean, it's the delicate nature of how we both keep a hold of our independence when we need to, but also know that we've got to take those openings, and we're looking for all the allies that we can.
Okay. Manuel Criollo, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
We're glad. You've always been with us. The question is, are you on the phone, too?
I'm on the phone and looking at Tammy, yes.
Okay, sounds good. This is Manuel Criollo, this is Eric Mann. I'm on the phone with Manuel Criollo, one of the lead organizers with the Strategy Center and Bus Riders Union. Manuel, Tammy told us a little bit about the World Social Forum, so we're going to move to part two, which is, this is not just slightly interesting that it's held in Caracas, Venezuela, but maybe Caracas, Venezuela is more important than the World Social Forum. So why don't you tell us the Chavez revolution, the Bolivarian revolution, is obviously going to be slandered, both by the United States government, but also by some people on the left who are going to, who never, you know, who are for revolution every place except where it really exists. So, you know, why don't you tell us a little bit about what do you see with your own eyes? Can you see a revolution?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's something new. You know, I've had the fortunate luck to have gone to Cuba also, and obviously here it's a little different because there's still a delicate dance of still trying to balance, you know, some ability to manage and make concessions with different capitalist forces inside the country. But I'd say for definitely what one of the things that we've been able to really view has been going to a lot of different centers of resistance, both organizations that have existed, you know, before the revolution. So, you know, Tammy just talked about 23, Enero and stuff. And we've also been view a new group like the Sin Techos, essentially means the folks without roofs, who have taken up Chavez's call to basically reclaim, you know, unused, in this instance, he's been calling for the unused land to be returned to the people. Here they're doing unused buildings that are unoccupied, that, you know, the owners are not leasing to people, and they're essentially taking over, and with the help of the government, they're able to reestablish whole new rules about moving in people to these new buildings, establishing essentially, you know, the government pays the owners the buildings, but they make sure that to essentially occupy it as sort of the first occupying force to proclaim the building for the people. Today, me and Lenin went to the University of Simón Bolívar, Bolivariana, which is the new university that is counter to a certain degree. All the big universities are state universities, but essentially the main central university here in Caracas is still made up of the elite. You still have to have really super grades. You have to go to private school to essentially get into a central university. So they establish essentially an alternative university where students have an opportunity to not only study, but I think more importantly, they're developing their cadres. They're creating new types of professions that have real close ties to the masses. So right now they've established we went today to the School of Public Health because they wanted to know about our environmental justice and public health, what we do in Los Angeles, because they essentially are creating health organizers that are going to go out into the field, talk to people and figure out how they move forward on different projects. So, you know, I think one of the things that's really impressive here has been they have this whole thing about power to the people, and essentially there's been a huge move since the coup attempt that Tammy talked back in 2003, that people, the government is establishing essentially this is your revolution and you need to take essentially charge of it. Obviously they're throwing a lot of money into, they have the economic infrastructure to say, to put, you know, invest money into healthcare, invest money into educational programs. Venezuela now, they just were able to win by UNESCO essentially they're a non-illiterate country now, and that happened through a program that was established by the Cubans and the Venezolanos, and it took them almost a year and a half to reach that note, you know. And again, it's sort of been the cornerstone of most of the revolutions throughout Latin America we've seen. And so I would say, yeah, I mean, I think it's just been the most compelling piece has been the concept of power to the people and essentially crying, you know, one of the things that President Hugo Chavez has been talking in the last two big sessions that he's had, when he had a big open session with everybody who was the World Social Forum, and yesterday he closed it with a meeting with all the sort of leading social movements of Latin America, and talking a lot about participatory democracy and sort of rejecting the concept of representative democracy where, you know, it talks a lot about, you know, representative of electing somebody, but you only elect somebody every 4 years. Here they're trying to essentially make people, you know, take a huge piece of this process. And I think in many ways it's trying to find some of the balance or some of the critiques of past socialist experiments, and are really trying to move forward on how to, you know, involve and figure out how, what the form of planning and what form of society do people want to build upon. And I think a lot of their work has been dedicating a lot of resources to that and building cadre and organizers.
Eric Mann with Damon Azali in L.A. We're on the phone with Manuel Criollo and with Tammy Bang Lu in Caracas. Manuel, your sound is sort of moving in and out. It may not be something you could control in terms of the volume. And then both of you, a little slower is fine. You're not that much in a hurry. So starting with you, Manuel, and Tam, you could please come in also. Hugo Chavez apparently gave two major addresses, he said. I think we know that revolutionary rhetoric from the left is sometimes very general, very vague, and yet at times there's actually great oratory. What was he saying? If you were the CIA, what would you be thinking if you were listening? If you were Manuel Criollo and Tammy Lu, what would you be thinking? So what were the key points that he hit? And was there some new theory or some new things that he was putting out historically?
Absolutely. I think, I think on some level he is providing right now he's attempting to provide a lot of line, orientation to the left at this moment. And his assessment of essentially trying to build an alternative bloc, still within the framework of sort of capitalist development, but is trying to really push for, many of the left-leaning governments in South America,
Manuel,
to essentially create an integrated.
Manuel, if you can maybe change phones with Tam, because it's really hard to hear when you're speaking. It's going in and out.
The only thing I was saying, I'm sorry, it was that on some level what's happened is that he is trying to, President Hugo Chavez, to a certain degree, has reached a certain maturity level where he is trying to provide really line orientation to the left. And so one of the big things that he pushed for in his last conversation was, I would say, it's around three pieces. One was the integration of Latin America here in the South, essentially within the capitalist form of what we have, but essentially a block against U.S. imperialism. And one of the ways that they've, one of the big victories that they're claiming right now is the defeat of George Bush in Argentina at the end of last year, when he was going to Argentina to essentially push the FTAA on most of the countries. And, from their perspective, they had, intimidated a lot of governments, were threatening them with, certain economic sanctions. And at the end of the day, even after all those, attacks, most of the governments of Latin America essentially rejected the signing of the FTAA. Everybody remembers, George Bush said by 2005 we'll have the FTAA throughout Latin America. And now, essentially, it has had to move to a tactical sort of difference now, where they have to now sign country by country, which makes it harder for the U.S. to essentially now have almost, a vote in Congress almost every time. And so that's creating, obviously, last time with the Central American Free Trade Agreement, they barely won by one vote, and that, again, was through a lot of threatening, even their own base of the Republican Party. Second, I would say that he is saying we are on the offensive. We in the left are in the offensive, and has essentially called for a third world sort of orientation. And so talked a lot about Africa and Asia as critical pieces to the fight against U.S. imperialism, and reaching out to those forces and trying to at least he talked a lot about Bandung and the important meeting back in the early 60s that
looks like we just had hello?
There? Manuel, are you here?
Yes, I am.
Okay, you just dropped off a little bit, so
yeah,
keep going.
this is Venezuela, folks, so hang in there.
Yes. So that was the second piece, and I think in other words...
Well, slow down again. Manuel, can you hear me? Manuel?
Yes.
All right, so you just want to clarify. He was talking, Hugo Chavez was talking about the Bandung Conference of Non-Aligned Nations in 1955 in Bandung, Indonesia, where for the first time Asian, African, and Latin American nations argued for even non-alignment, which was really saying independence. That was code for independence from the United States. So now, after years of U.S. domination of the Third World again, Chavez is openly calling for a new Bandung and a new alliance of the non-aligned and independent and anti-imperialist countries. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And
so take it further from there.
And so his call is now essentially he's trying to say, look, we can really defeat imperialism within, you know, the next century. I mean, he's essentially, we were not able to defeat imperialism by the end of the century. You know, it's sort of the question around, will even the survival of humanity even exist? And I think he really challenged the whole crew of Latin Americans, particularly because they're so, at this moment, are reaching sort of a critical mass, especially with the last election of Evo Morales in Bolivia. And so the third piece that I think was very important for him, which I think was the most monumental piece of his speech, was essentially the call for socialism and the reivindication of the socialist experiment. And it seems like he himself and his own sort of speech, you know, his own ability of his transformation politically, where very early in his life it seemed like he spoke a lot about Simón Bolívar and the general integration of Latin America, has now reached sort of a total sort of circle where now he's quoting Karl Marx, he's quoting Fidel Castro, he's quoting Rosa Luxemburg, and it's sort of challenging, you know, like we can construct socialism, and gave a lot of examples of how one of the things that here in Venezuela have been pushing is this concept of the ALBA. It's the Alternative Bolivarian Development Project, and essentially it's on one level at this moment, the early stage, is just trade within the nations here in Latin America, but trade that is not based on monetary exchange, but good exchanges. And so that's how he's established a lot of Petrocaribe and Petroamerica, is essentially giving that subsidized petroleum to Caribbean nations. It's sort of saying, I'll provide you, you know, the petroleum that we have, and you provide whatever technical assistance. In Cuba's case, has been doctors and educators. In the case of Uruguay and Argentina, it is bringing, it's exchanging of petroleum for cows, dairy cows, so we can send them in the provinces as they're building new cooperatives inside the provinces here in Venezuela to provide, you know, sort of cooperatives. Farming cooperatives of dairy out in the rural areas, so they can also become self-sustainable. Because one of the problems that Venezuela has historically had is that they've essentially been an importing nation of a lot of products, and even he was even explaining the case of Bolivia and Ecuador, where they both are places where they extract you know, the natural resources like petroleum. But they have to import the petroleum because they have no way to develop, have never developed any way to really, process the petroleum in their own country. And so, I think one of the things that he stressed in his conversation about the building of socialism has been the socialism that he obviously, I think, to a certain degree criticized the experiments from the last century are sort of the lack of participatory nature, or at least some of the major critiques of that experiment were that at moments they didn't necessarily allow full participation of folks. And I guess here in Venezuela, they are really trying to move on how do we build, you know, how do we develop a country but yet give power to the people to essentially be able to negotiate the planification of their economy, of their lives, with people in the base, and how they develop that economy and sort of that new lifestyle that they want to build.
Manuel, you have 2 minutes, Tam. I'm sorry, we had about 16 more really great questions for you. I wanted to ask you about your organizing, you know, the actual organizing and translation between that and the work in L.A., but we're running out of time. And so, Manuel, I'm going to ask you, both historically and memorially, with the death of Shafiq Handala, if you could talk about, you have 2 to 3 minutes, to talk about the specific conditions under which he died and any thoughts you've been having about his historical significance.
Yeah, you know, we found out early in the morning, on Tuesday morning, and last Tuesday morning, and obviously for me and for Lenin and for Tammy, it was totally personal because on some level we felt that we had a connection with Shafiq, and especially in the last election that the Sergeant Center was able to participate in it. You know, one of the things that happened with Shafiq, he died of a heart attack once he arrived in the airport in San Salvador. He had just been in Venezuela the week before having meetings with Hugo Chavez. One of the things that the FMLN is trying to do right now is the local municipalities are trying to get exchanges of petroleum for their municipalities, you know, and obviously to a certain degree it's a subsidized cost. Second, he had just been at the Evo Morales inauguration, and President Chavez talked about, you know, seeing Shafiq in at this major speech. He talked about Shafiq and gave a lot of praise, and he was wonderful. I mean, he's a beautiful storyteller, so he told a story about how he first met Shafiq and how Shafiq was one of the few people inside the left, like, say, the traditional left, that had taken Hugo Chavez under his wing, because Hugo Chavez had essentially, at his early in his life, was seen as sort of just a golpista, a person who did a coup d'etat, sort of a relatively nationalist, but not a revolutionary in that sense. And, you know, from a certain perspective for certain forces in the left. And then talked about how, you know, for everybody, it was such an important moment to see the coordination of Evo Morales as new president. I think the lasting legacy for Shafiq is essentially going to be his historical role in, you know, providing leadership for the liberation of El Salvador. I mean, for people who don't know, he started his political life at a very early age, at the age of 14, when he was in, you know, not even in junior, he was in junior high. He had marched against the dictatorship in El Salvador. From the very early 60s, he was the head of the Communist Party and was one of the leading figures in having really broad united fronts for democratic rights inside of El Salvador, which essentially the left was able to win elections, and yet the dictators, the militaries were always sort of overthrowing or, you know, winning through fraud. And so that essentially led to, you know, the point where people sort of decided, hey, we've tried almost every other means. Now that we tried elections, they used fraud, and now they're just essentially killing us and assassinating. So a lot of them decided to take up arms, and also that, and the Communist Party again was a critical piece of that, was sort of like when they decided to go into the armed struggle was when essentially also when they were also one of the forces that was able to provide the United Front of the Frente, because as everybody knows, that's an arm. At one moment was a divided group of five different organizations.
Manuel, we're going to have
to... So, you know, I think that's sort of his historical tale of who he is.
Well, I think we're very happy to have Manuel and Tammy on the show. I mean, think about 10 years ago, it was Fidel Castro alone, and now Evo Morales, Lula in Brazil, Kirchner in Argentina, the great Hugo Chavez. Very, very exciting. Latin America's on the move. Are we going to take a break, or are we staying around? We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Ruthie Gilmore talking about the Arnold Schwarzenegger and the re-imprisonment movement. Tammy and Manuel, have a great time, and we'll see you when you get back.